Perhaps you know the story of Pheidippides. Raise your hand if you do. Don't tell us what it is, but raise your hand. It's all right. As you can guess by the name of Pheidippides, it's probably a Greek story. In about 490 BC, 25 miles away from Athens, the Persians had gathered a huge army and were poised to take Athens. The Greeks went out and met them head on. And after an epic battle in which all of Greek civilization was hung in the balance, the Greeks, of course, were victorious. Pheidippides was the one who was to go to Athens to bring the good news. And he was to run 25 miles from the battle to Athens, nonstop with any breaks, across the battlefield, across the plains. And finally, he burst into the city assembly. And with his last breath, he shouted, "Rejoice! We conquered." And then he collapsed and died. Well, the name of the plain where that climactic battle took place was Marathon, which is where we get the term for the 25-mile run. The Apostle Paul loves the image of the race. It is one of his favorite metaphors. And the Church of Philippi was also one of his favorite churches. It was not exempt from division and pettiness, which was common to all churches and is common to all churches. But it was a very generous congregation. It supplied the church in Jerusalem with needed help during a time of famine. It also sent their friend Epaphroditus to support Paul, who was in prison. Most likely at this time he was in prison in Ephesus. Now poor Epaphroditus, during his travels, was infected with an illness and almost died. But he represented the spirit of the Philippians, generous, unselfish, willing to serve. In the Roman Empire, if you were a prisoner, they were not obligated to give you any food. So you had to rely on your friends and your family. And Epaphroditus, along with Timothy, came to serve Paul, came to give him food and clothing and help. Epaphroditus and the church in Philippi were Paul's source, his source of care, along, like I said, with his spiritual son, Timothy. When Paul planted the church in Philippi, he was given a dream. A Macedonian came to him and said, "Come and help us." So he went to Philippi. He planted the church. Philippi, of course, was a Roman province and became the place to house the first church in Europe. Paul's words today, he is pondering his fate. His time of martyrdom was just around the corner. Nero began his persecution, and Paul would be one of his victims, though he still had some time after the writing of Philippians. He was released, but of course ended up in prison in Rome eventually. But his words from Philippians are powerful. And he gives advice to his readers and advice to us. He says these things: forget what is behind. Strain forward. Press on toward the goal of Christ. And you can see the image of a runner running a race. Isn't it also baptismal imagery? So let's look at these things. First, forget what is behind. Do we not have difficulty leaving the past behind? Ironically for Paul, the past was supposed to be a time of faithfulness to God. He had an impressive theological pedigree. He was trained by one of the most renowned rabbis in all the world, Gamaliel. Paul knew the law. He knew the traditions of the elders. Paul was zealous for the truth to the extent that anything that threatened the truth, he would persecute, including the church. And he was, as he says, blameless in his conduct. But for the sake of Christ, he had to leave that resume behind. He was running, but he was running the wrong way. He remembers Jim Marshall, defensive lineman for the Minnesota Vikings. 1964, he was playing against the San Francisco 49ers. 49ers receiver caught a pass, and he began to run, and he was hit. He fumbled. Jim Marshall picked up the ball, and he saw in front of him nothing but daylight. So he began to run at full speed, running to the end zone, looking to his bench, and the bench were all going like this. And he said, "Man, this is awesome." And when he got to the end zone, he threw the ball into the stands. But then something happened. He didn't understand why the 49ers players were patting him on the back and why the ref was going like this instead of this. He gave the 49ers 2 points because he ran the wrong way. Sometimes we have to see in our lives, even if we've been Christians for a very long time, that we are running the wrong way. Paul saw it on the road to Damascus. Jesus appeared to him and he fell off his horse. Paul had to look honestly and soberly at his resume and say, "It is all rubbish." Now we've turned that into a nice British phrase, but it is actually quite strong. I won't say what it would be in our equivalent American vocabulary. But yesterday was the feast day of St. Francis. Francis grew up, of course, the son of a wealthy merchant. And when Christ got hold of him, he was compelled to throw everything that his father had given him out the window. Now, of course, his father was furious. And he brought him by his ear before the bishop. He said, "This son of mine has given away all my things. Bishop, give me justice." The bishop, of course, could just shrug his shoulders. And Francis said, "You're right, Father. And I'm sorry. Now, here today, I have another father who is in heaven." And Francis took off his clothes, handed them to his father, and went off into the woods, leaving behind his resume as a wealthy merchant's son, as a soldier, and all the things that he had done in his life. He regarded it as rubbish. To follow Christ means we must leave some things behind. Perhaps it's our anger. Perhaps it's our perfectionism. Perhaps it is, as Richard Rohr says, carrying around a list of other people's mistakes and being resentful about it. Paul says, "All of those things that I was, perfection, righteousness, are rubbish in comparison to knowing Christ." What do you need to leave behind? What part of your resume do you need to tear up? So we forget what is behind. Paul continues, we strain forward and press on toward the goal of Christ. There again is the runner's metaphor. You can see the runner pressing on toward the finish line. And when Paul uses this term, press on, he is also borrowing from the world of hunting. What he is describing is a genuine pursuit, a striving, a hunting for the kingdom of God and Christ. You can feel his passion. You can hear the words of Jesus. The kingdom of heaven is being taken by force. Now, Paul is not just talking about heaven when you die. He is talking about the calling that Jesus has given him and the desire to follow him at all costs. Now, I want you also to discern Paul's tone here. There is a bit of blood, sweat, and tears in this pressing on. But it is not out of duty and sadness and grimness and clenching of teeth. We're talking about a pursuit of joy. Back to our friend, Pheidippides, Robert Browning's poem. So when Persia was dust, all cried to Acropolis, "Run, Pheidippides, one more race. The meed is thy due. Athens is saved. Thank Pan, go shout." He flung down his shield, ran like fire once more, and the space twixt the fennel field. And Athens was stubble again, a field which a fire runs through. Till in he broke, "Rejoice, we conquer, like wine through clay." Joy in his blood, bursting his heart, the bliss. The runner runs with joy. This is the Christian marathon. This is the baptismal life. Now, it's also joy, because as our old friend Jack Stapleton says, you can be a disciple of anyone. You can pick up Aristotle's works, and you can follow his teaching. You can pick up Plato, follow his teaching. You can pick up anyone, read their words, and try to put them into practice. However, you can only be an apprentice of someone who is alive. And that is the joy of the Christian life. It is a joy to be in the presence of Jesus because he is alive, guiding us, speaking to us, speaking through us every day. One last point. Finish well. Paul says later to Timothy, this is when he was at the end, "I have fought the good fight. I have kept the faith. I have finished the race." Terry Fulham was one of the best priests the Episcopal Church has ever had. He passed away last year. And one of his most moving sermons I ever heard was a sermon based on Isaiah, "And you will mount up with wings like eagles." Fulham loved eagles, and I share a bit of his words to close today. He says, "When an eagle is about to die, the eagle leaves the nest and goes to a great rock